My rookie mistake was not considering if or when this podcast blows up and is really successful. What kind of expert will I be?
Welcome to Podcast Coaching with Christine. Here we talk about how to grow your podcast using industry insights and broadcasting strategies. Hello and welcome to the show. Today we have Melissa Guller. She is a podcast coach, producer, course creator, and host of Wit and Wire. She is also the marketing director at Teachable and host of Everything is Teachable. We are so lucky to have her on the show, guys. She is giving out some really amazing free content all the time on the regular. So if you are a podcaster and you're just launching, her Instagram is going to be super helpful to you, and so will her podcast. Melissa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. And you were just saying you are calling from St. Louis. That's where you're based.
I am. Yes, this is my hometown and the home of gooey butter cake, one of the best desserts on the planet. And I'm fortunate enough that at least a silver lining of all of the pandemic going on is I get to be around my family more. So I'm trying to take the positive and enjoy the extra time from a distance.
Yeah. That is such a good thing that I also keep trying to remind myself is like the fact that we've been able to put into perspective how important the people in our lives are and finding ways to spend time with them in a safe way.
Definitely.
It's pretty awesome. So Melissa, you are helping podcasters launch their podcast. You have been in the podcasting world for about 2 years. And what do you think about all of this? How is this going?
How's it going? I mean, what a loaded question for 2020. I would say overall, I feel really optimistic thinking ahead towards podcasting in 2021. I think it's clear that it's a growing space for the best. I think if I were to look at 2020 as a year in podcasting, I'd say this is a huge year of growth. A lot of technology is evolving. A lot of new diverse voices are getting into this space. And in the best way possible, I think it's more accessible now than ever to become a podcaster. So I'm definitely excited about what's to come. And hopefully even more diverse voices are going to join this space in the next year.
Yeah, I love that. And you've had a ton of success, especially with your Teachable podcast. That's where you got your start?
I started with my own podcast. It's hilariously titled now, but I called my first podcast Figuring It Out. Like, looking back at this show, it's just such a funny nod to what it really became because it was a playground for me to learn how to podcast. I had been teaching in person for years. I've been teaching at General Assembly this would have been my sixth year, but obviously in person isn't quite what it used to be. But I always had this itch to start a podcast to reach a different kind of audience. And I thought because I had a teaching background, maybe it could help, but it was actually very different. Interviewing is so different from teaching, and teaching in person is so different than talking in a room by yourself recording a solo episode. But that first podcast gave me the space to, ironically, figure out a lot about the medium. And after I did about 30 interviews on my own and started to see what worked, I realized that I made a lot of rookie mistakes, which I don't see as a bad thing. I feel like the only way to really learn is to do. So then I started my second podcast called Book Smart, and that was always meant to be a hobby. My friend M. Hamelshaver and I talk about personal development books. And between those two shows, I gained the confidence to pitch Teachable CEO on starting a podcast because I saw the opportunity for us to really showcase our course creators, people who use the platform. And so I went in with a pitch. I said, look, I've produced 50 episodes of my own accord. I've learned a ton about this space, and I was able to pitch the concept and get the budget to become the host and producer of Everything is Teachable.
Way to advocate for yourself and what you believe in. That is just totally BA.
You got to do it. I mean, my life and career have all come from opportunities where I've just said, hey, what if I tried this? Whether it was to a boss at a company or even just on my own saying, hey, what if I tried this podcast? And I think maybe for listeners tuning in now, you don't have to wait for permission. if you want to go out and start a podcast, you already have permission. You can try it out. And if it doesn't go well the first few episodes, you can always change things. And I think that's something that I've really continued to learn and talk about, is that nothing about your podcast is permanent. But I think too many people wait until the idea is perfect to start. And perfect is definitely the enemy of the done, the enemy of the great. So just rest assured that anything you've said about your new podcast today, you can always change or adjust later.
Yes, you can. And let me tell you what, I have learned so much just through my own podcast. I don't know how much you've listened, Melissa, but
I did just binge quite a bit. So I'm a little caught up.
Okay. Well, if you started at the very beginning, you'll notice my podcast used to be called Podcasting Made Easy. And then I got slapped with like this trademark email that scared the out of me. And then I found out after the fact that the person who sent me that email that caused me to change everything actually had no basis. And so,
could I guess who it is? Oh, like not out loud, but do you think that I probably know?
It's a guy.
Oh, no, I'm wrong.
In the industry. Who might be somebody similar to the person you're thinking of, because I think I now know who you're thinking of, but yeah. It was not like the goddess.
I see.
That's
okay.
Who you're thinking of.
Yeah. I love our code speak. We'll be curious to hear if any listeners have any clue what we're talking about. But yeah, the world of trademarks is definitely, I think, one of the number one questions, at least I know my podcasting students are asking about, because yeah. I mentioned it's a blessing that more and more podcasts are coming out, but all the good names are taken, it feels, to a lot of my students. So I know that's a big like question mark.
Yes, it is. But there are ways you can change it so that it's yours. And yeah. Still, like, adding your name is going to be a big, like, unique, specific thing to your podcast. Speaking of podcasts, yours, Wit and Wire, is all about podcasting, starting your podcast, figuring out your voice, figuring out your topic, and then growing to make an impact, which I love, because that's what we like to do here at Podcast Coaching with Christine and with my company Bright Sided. We like to help people make a podcast that makes an impact. What has been the biggest takeaway for you? Like, what has been the most impactful thing?
I think that the way each of us measures success as a podcaster is really different. And when I started, I assumed that the way was to grow a huge audience. And even when I was trying to come up with a tagline for Wit and Wire, in the beginning, I was coming up with things like how to, you know, hit the charts or grow a following and all these things that can be important for some podcasters. But the more I listen to why my students are starting podcasts or think about my own journey, for a lot of people, it's to connect with other people in the instructional design space, or it's to meet with other mothers who are going through transition. And just the sense of either kinship with guests or community with listeners is huge. And that's why I think it's important to talk about all the different ways that podcasting can be beneficial. There are a lot of ways you can build an audience. And certainly if you're growing an online business, choosing how you generate leads and build up authority and a reputation for your brand is important. And I do think podcasting is amazing for that. It's definitely been a huge help for Wit and Wire. But there's just so many other things to consider. And I hope that people tuning in don't see this as, oh, I have to grow a podcast that has 5,000 downloads every single episode, and that's the only way I'll be successful. There are so many ways that even right from the beginning, with only your mom and a couple other listeners, that you can really find what I believe could be your definition for success.
Yeah. And do you believe, when you're talking about your definition of success, because success, right, can be defined so many different ways, is figuring out, hey, is this something I want to turn into a business someday? Or is this something that could help me connect with like-minded people? Or this could be something to lead me to the thing that I want it to be? Is that, like, there's so many different avenues.
Definitely. And I am a data analyst by trade, and I love numbers and I love to define things. So I'm not here to tell you that success is like if it feels good. Certainly that can be one of your metrics. But to me, I mean that there are real tangible categories. So in my courses, I talk about three P's, three different kind of roads you could take. So the first is passion. Maybe you're starting a podcast because you and a friend
really enjoy talking about personal development books. That's what it was like for me and Em. And we got enjoyment just out of doing it. Then I think there's a second P, which is what I call a platform podcaster. And your goal is probably to spread awareness around a topic or to build an audience. And for you, your podcast will become more valuable the more people you're speaking to. Then the third P is profit. And you don't have to have a huge, huge audience in order to profit from your podcast. And that's why I think they're so different. And understanding if you are a passion platform or profit podcaster will help you make a lot of decisions around where to spend money, where to spend energy, and ultimately measure if you are your definition of successful.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you're data oriented. This has been like the data part of podcasting has been so important for me, but it has been a new thing for me because my background being in TV, like broadcast news, switching to data has been kind of like, I think that that also can be difficult for podcasters who are like, wait, should I be looking at the data? I'm like, oh yes, you really should. And you should find time at least each month to sit down, look at where you are with your podcast download numbers. Where are you seeing growth? Where are you maybe not seeing so much growth? And what can you do to change and finagle that? And what new tests can you try to increase the growth of your podcast downloads or the marketing efforts of your downloads? I'd like to know what you think about that. But before I forget to ask you, you started off saying rookie mistakes. And I think that my audience would love to know what some of the rookie mistakes might have been that you made so that they can maybe stop themselves from making them, and or if they're in the process of making them, they can turn gears.
Sure. I think the biggest one is actually relevant to what we're currently talking about, knowing why you're podcasting and what success feels like to you. So my first show, which I called Figuring It Out, I called it kind of the modern millennial playbook. And I had all kinds of guests and they were all fascinating and incredible people. We talked about anything from how to write a resume in a modern era that's like not your mama's resume, how to write a dating profile that's not terrible, just all kinds of topics that I felt like people roughly in my generation were thinking about. But my rookie mistake was not considering if or when this podcast blows up and is really successful, what kind of expert will I be? I didn't have any professional interest in being like a millennial expert. And so when I tried to think about why would somebody invite me to be on their show or how would this support my business in the end, there was no obvious link. I also didn't think enough about my ideal listener. And I talk about this a lot in my courses, but knowing exactly who your podcast and your business are for, those are both hugely important. And I think I had a clear listener, which is why I didn't miss this at first. I knew I was talking to millennials, but if you go out in your mind and you say like, oh, where are the millennials? Like it's too broad. Just defining a generation is too broad of a category. They don't have enough in common. Like I'm sure anybody listening can think about your own generation, whether it's millennial or not. And you know people who are likely to be kind of similar to you, but tons of people in your own generation are so different. It's way too big. So I think those were the two biggest mistakes I made. One was not choosing a narrow and specific enough listener who had enough in common with the rest of her peers in my ideal listening audience. And the other was not thinking about what this would do for my own authority and what kind of expert my podcast topic would position me as for other opportunities.
Yeah. So for the listeners out there, try to figure out what you want your expertise to be. And if that's the thing that you want to be podcasting about, do they align? So is it a hobby podcast or is it something that you want to be considered a thought leader in this space and now you're an expert and so people are going to come to you for this expertise? Super interesting. Rookie mistake. So I'm going to back up a little bit and share with you. So I got my start so I'm a broadcaster. I was a TV news reporter for 10 years. But then I found myself working at a marketing company. And I was like, ooh, I don't know how I feel about this. Hashtag not my brand. And then I got started producing podcasts behind the scenes for someone else and had so much success doing it, because it turns out there's so much overlap when it comes to telling stories and journalism and podcasting, and produced really big podcasts for them, and then decided to, you know, start working with other people, having that same success before I launched my own podcast. And so I think for me, a beginner mistake that I'm still grappling with is I decided to make this an ongoing podcast show instead of a seasonal show. And I teach doing seasonal shows, especially for people who are just starting, to give yourself an out, to give yourself a start and a stop point, to give yourself time to figure out what you're doing and if it's something you like doing, if it actually adds value to your business and your life, or not. So I started off with an ongoing show, and there's been stops and starts and stops and starts, which is not something that I coach. And I truly believe in leading by example. So that's why I feel like it's such a rookie mistake, because I know better, but I did it anyway. And now I'm still like, am I going to turn this into a seasonal show at one point or not? Because it can really, you don't know, well, at least we didn't know that I was going to be pregnant at one point and that it was going to kind of influence the production schedule. And so, I mean, of course, being pregnant and having a baby will change things, but I don't think we knew to how much it was going to become a big deal.
I think the advice still carries though, because even if a listener is not planning to become pregnant, I think any time you start a new project, there are unknowns. Mm-hmm. And I think just accepting that is really healthy. And just going into it saying, I bet the first version of what I do is not going to be what this looks like in a year, but I'm going to start anyway, I think is really important. And I think you have to embrace the learning part of anything. Like, I love to learn. I'm devouring like blog posts and courses. Like, I'm constantly learning from other people and just trying out new things. And I see my podcast and my business to some extent as like a playground of opportunity. And if I'm not trying new things, then how do I know something out there isn't better? How do I know I'm not currently on the worst possible version? So I definitely would encourage people to like play with format, try doing seasons, decide that you want to just do something randomly in one episode. Nothing has to be like the rule. Just because you do something for one episode doesn't mean it has to be that way for every episode afterwards. So I would say don't be afraid to just kind of give it a go.
Yeah, I so agree with you. And thank you for coming in there and like saving me from my like weird spiral. but yeah, it's okay to change your mind. And I think having a start and stop point. So if you're considering starting a podcast, or you've started and you want to turn it into a seasonal show, absolutely possible. Also, you can stop and restart, have a whole new show.
You can do it all. Not all at once. You could do anything you want. Maybe better to say you can do anything, not you could do everything.
Oh, yes. That sounds like a great new show. you can do anything.
It's true.
Everything. That actually brings up a great point I'd love to talk about with you, because I think that so many podcasters get overwhelmed with feeling like they have to do everything and they have to be everywhere, and then being like, oh shoot, so do I need an Instagram channel and a newsletter and a landing page and a lead magnet and a Pinterest and a YouTube and a LinkedIn, and should I be blogging, and should I be also pitching myself on other podcasts? And
don't forget about TikTok. That's the rage now too.
I gotta be TikToking. Why am I not TikToking? So there's just so many things that I think we can get bogged down in our minds. Like, what are we doing? What would you say to the person who feels like they need to be doing everything at the same time to be successful with their show?
I think this is a really common thing that new podcasters, new business owners all feel, because like you said, I think the pressure is real that unless you're in every single new social media platform and you're doing absolutely everything, that you aren't doing as much as you can. But I think it's way better to be engaging rather than to just exist everywhere. And so in time, I think as your show gains momentum, you'll figure out what do you like to do versus what could be outsourced. I think editing is a fairly common thing to outsource. It's certainly not the only thing that can be outsourced. But at the beginning, let's say you want to do all the components, even just to learn about them. I would say the biggest areas that you can cut back on are thinking you have to be on every social media platform, and even the ones you're on, all of the experts, you don't have to follow their advice about the ideal amount to post to all of them. Like right now, I'm rocking a solid one Instagram post per week, which would make an Instagram expert cringe. But truthfully, that's all the time I have to give to that platform, because as a businesswoman, I'm always asking, is this a money-making task? And algorithm be damned, I don't think posting to Instagram 7 times a week and 12 times to my stories is a money-making activity when I think about how much time I would have to put into it. So my simple advice would be, you can always add more later. Instead of thinking, what are all the things I could do? I would challenge you to think, what is the minimum amount I could do now that would still be effective, knowing you could add things later? For example, pick one social media channel, maybe two if you actually deep in your heart enjoy social media, but chances are your ideal listener is not equally on all of them anyway. Like people who are on TikTok, probably safe to say they might be on LinkedIn, but they're in each place for different reasons. So if your podcast is about career development, do Instagram or do LinkedIn, but don't bother with Instagram. Like I'm not personally going to Instagram for anything other than puppies. Like occasionally I want some interesting content that maybe is an inspirational quote or something that's kind of like a bite-sized takeaway. But LinkedIn, I'm there to see something professional. And so it fits what my expectations are. And just start with one post a week when your episode goes out. If you enjoy it, if you feel momentum build, you can add on. But I would just say, challenge yourself to say, what is the least I can do? It's not a sign of laziness. It's a sign of protecting your time and learning how your energy can be spent and what the ROI on all of your efforts are.
Yes. So I love that you mentioned ROI, especially when it comes to our efforts, because right, sometimes we don't see, there's different things that return on investment. So it doesn't always mean return on money. Right?
Yes.
Like I like to think ROI means, does me spending my time on this turn into more downloads to my podcast? Does me spending my time on this turn into more people who are going to my website? Like, what am I seeing work for me? And I really think you should just, you know, test whatever. Just keep testing. Don't be afraid of something. Test it, see if it works. If it doesn't work, stop doing it, do something else. But like, give yourself a chance to test something. So,
and can I add one more thing to that, which is, don't feel like you have to do something because you feel like everyone else is doing it. There are strategies that can work for everyone, but the more you get into your podcast and your business, you'll hear so much great advice. And that's the problem. You're not going to be choosing between good advice and bad advice. I think a lot of people will be savvy. You can weed out the bad advice. The problem is that you're choosing between good advice and good advice, but you have a finite amount of time. So you have to decide just in the moment, what good advice feels best to me. And if it helps, maybe say this month, I'm focusing only on, let's say, Pinterest. And in your mind, maybe you think, oh, wow, trying out YouTube, that could be fun. Trying out TikTok, that could be fun. But just file it away as an idea for later. And remember to just kind of keep it focused on the one good idea that's good for right now.
Yeah. One thing at a time. This is something I need to keep putting myself in check about, Melissa.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
It feels like there are always new strategies that sound so exciting, like things that I'm legitimately lit up by, and I see other people trying them and I'm like, oh, I want to try. Like Reels is the first thing that comes to mind. Objectively, I see this is working for a lot of business owners, and I just do not have the time and energy to figure it out right now. And I'm just being kind to myself about it. And I'm like, I don't have time. Like I just can't possibly do it right now. I would have to instead choose to not do something else. So it's really tough. And
as all things, podcasting evolves, and there are always going to be new things you can try. So I think people call it like shiny object syndrome. Like, don't necessarily get distracted by the new hot shiny thing. Keep doing what's working for you and stop things that aren't, and maybe file away a couple shiny things for later.
Yeah. And something I actually have to remind myself is if I am making the effort to do something, I'm already ahead. Like, if I have set myself up to record a podcast, get it edited, get it published, create the show notes, title, everything, if I'm doing this, I'm already doing something, and I need to cut myself some serious slack, because that's a lot. That's a lot. And you're pointed in the right direction if you're just doing a little bit of where you want to go, and where, like, you're chipping away at your dream every single week. That's fine. It doesn't need to be everything. It can just be, just putting out the podcast will make a difference. So
I love that. I also think that there's this pressure that podcasters put on themselves to launch quickly. And that if they don't launch on a certain timeline, for some reason, it feels like it's not good enough. But instead, I think maybe one of the best things that you can do if you're pre-launch on your show is to actually record a few more episodes before you launch, so that starting on your launch day, you're not back-to-back on a hamster wheel. So much as there's this pressure to, you know, launch maybe as quickly as possible, and I see all these like launch your podcast in 7 days things, I would say it's not about launching in 7 days, 14 days. Like, there's no right or wrong timeline. I would instead ask yourself, like, what's everything I can do right now to maybe even put myself ahead, so that when I launch, I am set up, I have a couple episodes ready to go, and I'm really excited and feel prepared and can actually enjoy and celebrate this day.
Yeah. Yes. And you should celebrate it, because you spent a lot of time working on it.
So. Yeah. And I can't stress enough what you said, which is that a lot of people don't do the work. Like, it may feel like you're doing all of this work and you haven't launched yet. But Christine, like you said, if you're just continuing to put in work every day, or even just a little bit every week, you are way ahead of the game, because so many people are not willing to put in that kind of work. So hopefully everybody could be a little kind to themselves and just say, you know, I'm doing my best. Even if I only got to sit down one day this week and just do a little bit, that's still me moving forward.
Yes. I love that. We're moving forward, Melissa, you and I.
We're doing it. We're doing it.
We are. Something I wanted to also bring up, and it was right there on the tip of my head, and now it's gone. So we'll come back to that. Teachable. You create courses on Teachable. Mm-hmm. How important is this? Well, I don't want to like actually piggyback and make podcasters stress out about that. How has creating courses on Teachable helped you personally? Do you enjoy doing it? I know you said you have a teaching background.
I do. I think that's probably what's most unique about my online courses, is that I was teaching in person first, and something you get in a classroom is feedback. So my first class that I taught to like a significant sized group of adult learners was Excel. Like I said before, I'm an analytics nerd. I'm a total Excel nerd. Like, these are all the things that bring me joy. And so when you teach that first class, you put in hours and hours towards the curriculum. You get to hear people ask you questions, and you get to actually tweak your curriculum. And so over the first year of teaching, I was just tweaking left and right. And by the second year, I was so confident in the curriculum. And I still got new questions asked, but I knew it was a better workshop than it was when I started. And I think that that mentality really helped me when it came to creating online courses, because the first time I released my Podcast Launch Accelerator program, I knew that things were going to be added. I knew that things were going to evolve. And so I did my best, even in an online setting, to invite feedback. I put like leaving comments in different places. I checked in with people personally. Like, I was doing things that didn't scale. I was reaching out to people. I was recording them personalized videos. And now I have a roadmap in my course where people can ask for different new videos, and they can upvote each other's requests. And that's how I decide what curriculum to develop. And I think just the fact that I'm going out of my way to ask people what they actually want to learn is huge. Now, I'll also add on that if you've never taught before, I wouldn't recommend starting with a fully recorded
online program. And that's me, like my teachable background, like all these things. Like I still wouldn't recommend jumping right into fully pre-recorded content because chances are you don't know exactly what people want. And I don't even mean in a video. I mean, what is the outcome they're looking for? Because people don't buy online courses to have 20 new videos to watch. They buy an online course because they want the thing that you've accomplished. They want the outcome. They want you to shortcut them to their goals. Like people join my program because they want to launch a podcast and they want somebody to walk them through all the technical mumbo jumbo and they don't want to worry about it. It's going to be the same for whatever your course might be. So think about the outcome, start with that end in mind, and then pitch maybe something that's not fully recorded. Something that's popular now is a group program and just see if people want to meet live and do a workshop every week. I did that the first iteration of my program. That way you kind of get the classroom feedback vibe in a smaller setting. It's really intimate for your students. They get really personalized access to you. But for anybody considering online courses, I would try to find ways to do what tech people called creating an MVP. Create the least possible effort version that still has your expertise, still has you working with people, still critically has you getting paid. I don't want you to just put something out there for free and not get paid. But I also don't want you to record like 60 tutorial videos that possibly nobody wants. So make sure people are willing to buy before you put in all the effort.
So I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about this, but charging.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is going to host a group program, say for example, I'm going to think about one of my clients who might want to do this at some point. Hosts a female empowerment podcast. She's awesome. She is an amazing marketer. And she's got so many different talents, but so many people start a podcast and they don't actually think about monetizing their own expertise. But you can absolutely do this even if it's not what your podcast is about. And she just so happens to be an amazing marketer. If she could set up a group coaching session, what would that look like in your mind?
Yeah, this is great.
What should she charge?
So the charging number I can come back to, but here's logistically what I would do. So let's say you have a podcast and you want to start a group program. What I would do is put together a sales page, and that'll help you outline what you think would be included. So what's the outcome of your program? What are maybe some of the weeks that you would cover? And even just the act of outlining the program, the sales page, however you want to think about it, will help you crystallize if there is a concept here. Then what I did, because the first time I launched my program, I did not build out all the curriculum in advance. What I did was I built out the first couple of weeks, and then I put up the sales page, and I said, if you join by the end of this week at this super reduced price, you're going to have a ton of extra access to me. If you need something that's not there, odds are good I'm going to make it for you or offer personalized support. And you're going to go through this journey with a bunch of other women starting podcasts. And I ended up getting 20 women to join. And I charged $4.99 for that program. It was a roughly like 3-month launch your podcast program. And I think that more than anything, the price that you can charge depends on the impact of your outcome. So for example, let's say you were teaching people how to, you know, do watercolor painting or a series of developing your skills. That's probably a different price point than if you're teaching somebody how to generate more leads for their business. Business is not the only topic you can charge more money for, but in general, the bigger the life transformation, the more you can charge. Another good example could be helping somebody get a new job. That's a significant life transformation. So you could charge more for a group program about finding a new job than you could maybe about arts and crafts, kitchen skills, things that are still very much valuable. Definitely don't hear me say that those have to be free. You can still charge. It's just that there are slightly different expectations, I think, for the ultimate buyer around how big the outcome is. I could also offer some tips around like length of time for a group program. I would say a month to 8 weeks is a good place to start because it's manageable for you as the teacher, but it's also more manageable for the people joining. If you've never taught anything before, figure out what outcome you could get somebody to in 30 days. So instead of asking yourself, like with your podcasting client, like instead of saying, what is
the ultimate biggest flagship program I could possibly teach about marketing. Maybe instead I could ask, what's something meaningful that people come to me for advice about all the time? And what's a version of that I could do in 30 days? So maybe it's how to add 100 Instagram followers in 30 days. Maybe it's how to find 100 new podcast listeners in 30 days. Something that you could bookend within a month or maybe 2 months is going to sound more attainable to you to produce, but also to the people who might join your program. So maybe that's a helpful framework as well.
Yeah, that is super helpful. There was a phrase you mentioned also that I'm trying to remember. Was it MVP?
Yes.
Oh, what could you... What does that mean?
I know my tech background, sometimes I just go into acronyms and start saying synergy all the way. So MVP is minimum viable product. Okay. It's used by a lot of tech startups to say, okay, the first version we build of Facebook, it's not going to look like the Facebook of today. And certainly anybody who's been on Facebook in the last decade knows it's evolved quite a bit. Instead, you're just asking yourself, what is the least amount of work I could do that would still actually help somebody achieve the outcome? So an example of a not MVP would be full course, workbook PDFs, tons of video, you in a studio, beautifully produced, all this money. That is not an MVP. Instead, an MVP is you putting together a sales page saying, here's my 4 weeks of content, here's what we're going to cover. And then for 4 weeks in a row, you go live on Zoom and then you share the recordings. That's an MVP. And that course, that program, could still have the same outcome that eventually your course will become once you do start to pre-record videos. But having an MVP mindset, I think, helps kind of cut the clutter of all the things that, yeah, might make the program look pretty, but they don't necessarily help people get to the outcome faster. And another word we use in tech a lot is iterating. And so for your podcast, for a course, for all of these, I think iterating on different versions is what's important. So you put something out there, you see what people say, great, you take the feedback, then you incorporate it. Now you can open the program again. And then you keep iterating on your course, iterating on your podcast seasons. And when you look at the big successful podcasters and business owners, that's how they got to be successful. They heard feedback, they kept growing, they kept taking what people said and making their programs or their podcast better and better.
I love it. I think that's so helpful, Melissa. Thank you for sharing.
I think in a lot of ways, it's a relief because you don't have to have it perfect the first time. So instead, you can just say, what can I do that's like this bare minimum that gets somebody to an outcome? Instead of saying, what is like the perfect, ultimate, beautifully produced experience? That's not going to help anybody.
I think that's so, like, truly, so many people I work with are perfectionists and want every single thing. And I find myself doing this, and then I have to like check myself. I want every single little thing to be perfect before they start. And you mentioned this earlier that perfect is just kind of the enemy of done. So just get something done and start.
Yeah.
And then you can iterate as you move forward. So I think that sharing this minimum viable product is... Mm-hmm.
Although it could be a minimum viable podcast too.
Or a podcast.
Maybe I'm onto something here.
You are. Bing. Is something that will grant people like an excuse to not put their all into something. Because also once we put our whole all into something and that we need it all to be perfect, we care so much when it's not. And then we like beat ourselves up so much when we don't meet our expectations. And that is just not a very good cycle to be in. I personally feel like I find myself trying to break that cycle for myself all the time. So
it's hard to do, especially when you are the host of your podcast or you're the main person of your solo business. It's hard to dissociate how the business or the podcast is doing from how you value yourself as a person. I think it's something a lot of us, like myself included, definitely think about at times. But maybe this mentality of, oh, you know, the first time I try something, that's all it is. It's a test. If it works, great, we build on it. If not, great, I try something else. It's not, oh, I put my podcast out there, nobody listens the first week, I must be a failure. Instead, it's just, oh, maybe I could try something else. Maybe there's a different approach or a different strategy I can take.
Yeah. I love that. Let's end there. I think that's so helpful. Melissa, is there anything else you would like people to know about you and what you do, and where can they find you?
People can find me on Instagram at witandwire or online at witandwire.com. And I think we've covered a lot here. I would just say that if anybody is thinking about starting a podcast, I would say just try to take little steps every day to not only pursue launching, but just imagine, how could it help your life if you had a podcast? And I don't mean, what would it look like if you had big sponsors and had this money? Instead, I mean, what if you could connect with people? What if you could build a community around something you really enjoy? What if, yes, you could actually grow your business by creating more awareness and building your expertise for your products, your services, or whatever you're putting out there? So podcasting has just brought so much good into my life. Unexpected good through meeting guests who have become true dear friends of mine through helping students, you know, launch and grow their shows. And so it's definitely not for the faint of heart. Putting out a podcast takes a lot of heart, and it does take, I think, a lot of work up front. So I don't want to sugarcoat it, but I think that it's worth it in the end if you have something to say.
Yeah. I love how you mentioned podcast takes a lot of heart, because sometimes you put like your whole heart and soul and your time into making something, and you should be proud of that. You shouldn't like think about all the other stuff. Just be proud of the time and energy and the heart you're putting into something, because it is going to mean something.
Definitely. And I don't know if other guests have shared this as well, but I was taught this by a few different people, but just imagine your listeners in a room, because I know it feels disheartening to think, oh, I only have 30 listeners. I only have 50 listeners. But if 50 people show up for you every single week, that's way more than most of us could get in person. So reaching that 50 people matters. They're coming back because what you're sharing matters to them. And over time, your podcast will grow. It will not look like a straight diagonal line up and to the right. Little things will happen, probably things that you don't expect, but they'll only happen if you stick to it. So I would say, give yourself a commitment of one season, like Christine, you mentioned earlier, to say, I want to see this out, and then just live, you know, in the uncertainty of it all. Give yourself a little time, see how it goes over the first 3 or 6 months, and try not to make any snap decisions just based on how the first week or two go.
Absolutely. Melissa, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been nice getting to know you.
Yeah, this has been so great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you guys for listening. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find this podcast on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and more. If you would like to email me directly, feel free to reach out at podcastcoachchristine@gmail.com. And of course, you can head to my website, christine-o'donnell.com, for frequently asked questions, the latest on what's going on in the industry, and I look forward to seeing you over there.